For January 18th, 2019, we talk about the Resident Evil 2 Remake demo, New Super Mario Bros. U Deluxe, and we do a free play multiplayer. Welcome to Level 270. My name is Cole Ross.
My name is Stephen Meismith.
And I'm Jala Prendez.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, David. After a technical difficulty last week, we nearly had four style last time, but you had to dip out.
Yeah. You know, computers hate me, basically.
you carry around an EMF field that disables them, that destroys them. The government is studying you.
That is irony.
yes, it is.
Given your line of work, yeah. But anyway,
Ben as well. He was supposed to be on tonight, but then his headphones crapped out at the last minute. So yeah, it's hard times here at the Level.
Oh. That's all right. I'm always here, and yep. So is Cole. Yep. So it works.
Yeah. So David, how's things going?
It's going pretty well. I forget. Is this the first time I've been back since the holidays?
Believe so, yeah. Last week was the first week we were back.
Nice. So, yeah. So that's, did the holidays, you know, saw the family, stuff like that.
Saw Ben and Dennis. Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. We did some, was it Time Squad or Agents of Time or whatever.
Time Stories? Spiff. Yes.
It's been a good time. It's finally getting a cold here, and I am super, super not thrilled about that. But
were you guys hit by that big snowstorm at all, or was that further south of you?
Mostly further south. We got a little bit of snow on Sunday morning, and it's been in like the mid-20s here.
Mm, yeah.
So it's been, you know, cold enough to snow, but has actually been snowing.
Yeah. No, it was kind of the same here. I'd feel dumb talking about weather, but yeah, like lots of, like, apparently it was a really, really big deal, like even in Cincinnati.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. I think Dennis got hit pretty bad too. So. Yeah, no, just hopefully everybody is okay, all of that. Yeah, so I don't know, like for me, I'm just getting back into the swing of New Year. Greta, for her, not for her birthday, we don't know when she was born, but for Christmas, we got an automatic feeder for her. And so she hears that, like, so you program in a voice sample to go along with it. Mm-hmm. I feel like for basically no reason, because it comes out like because it's really bad, but she hears the she hears the kibble pouring, and then she immediately like just leaves a cloud of smoke in the shape of a cat. It's very good.
I don't know if he's mentioned this on the podcast. It entertains me to no end that Dennis's cats have basically learned to con him and his wife that, you know, they get up at different times in the morning, and they've managed to get them both to feed them.
So they clean the bowl, and the person who wakes up later says, "Oh wait, you haven't been fed yet," and then they get a double portion. Yeah. wily things, dumb things, but wily things.
Yep.
Yeah. Dennis, since we started, not Dennis, fuck. Man, I hate it when I do that. I hate it so much. David, since we started Bonfireside Chat back up, I figured I'd make a recommendation to you. We're doing Immortal Unchained for that. I think that's a game you would dig.
All right. Yeah, I'll definitely check that out.
Yeah, it's Dark Souls. It's what if Dark Souls was a third person shooter?
Yeah, I. You know, when you first mentioned it, I'd looked into it some, and I really dig the look, at least from what I saw. It's sort of got the, like, futuristic by way of Tom Clancy type of look, kind of.
I don't know about the Tom Clancy. It's definitely futuristic.
Yeah, well, I guess what I mean is, like, it seemed like it was less just, like a very, very tactical, you know, kind of look on that. Like everyone looked like they, night vision goggles or whatever are mandatory.
Yeah, lots of bits and bobs glued to Futureman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I'll check that out. That sounds pretty sweet.
I figured you'd dig it. Jell, how about you?
I have to write down that potential title real quick.
no, so after you've written that down, how
are you, Jell? I've written it down. I can reply. Okay, so since the last time I was on, I basically finished up my resolution ruck. So I finished my 50 miles and however many days. And it's funny, one of the guys that I had rucked with for that 20-mile ruck that I did, he finished it, but he and I both basically got some form of weird cooties that must have come from one of the newbies that were rucking with us, because we both got sick at the same time after that particular rucking session. So, and we didn't have physical contact with each other or anything, and nobody was breathing on us. So I don't know where that came from, but, anyway, so like, I've been battling cooties, but he's been worse off than I am. And he, basically decided that he was going to finish this resolution ruck come hell or high water. And yesterday he rucked 30 miles. So he could get all 50 miles within like 2 days, two sessions of rucking. So
that's kind of crazy.
Yeah. So he finished 30 miles yesterday and, he's done. He did it too. Hooray.
Powering through.
Yep. Pretty much. But, other than that, I'm glad I'm not running the marathon this year, because it's supposed to be 10 to 15 degrees with the wind chill factor.
Yeah.
And that sucks. Like, wow, I'm glad I'm not doing that. I'm still going to be outside, but I'm going to be cheering on everybody on the sidelines with the Camp Gladiator folks. So, yeah.
Very cool. So, I mean, by which I mean, literally, it sounds like it's going to be quite cold outside.
Oh, yeah. It will be very cold. Yeah. So yeah, there you go. That's what I've been up to. That's what I've been doing. You can see beautiful pictures of my cute little bird, Rami. I posted in the level chat before we started about my very adorable bird and his cuddliness.
Yes. So, cuddle birds. Yeah. Like I said, a cuddle bird with a cuddle bone for his calcium, you see.
Yep.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that sounds like banter to me. We talked about a fitness thing. We talked about pets. I said the wrong name for one of the co-hosts. It's all there. We've got a banger of a show for you. We've got a lot to talk about on the grind. We've got a free play multiplayer. And in lieu of the brief, we have, well, something special. Why don't I introduce it after I say the brief, where usually we ask you a question and you answer it. But this time, because we wrapped up the voting on the title of the year, why don't we get even more self-indulgent and talk about some of these results? So I see an anonymous...
Wait, so is the brief normally where we ask them a question and they answer it?
Yeah, no. I see... I'm all backwards.
It's because Ben got, like, he was on the call for 2 seconds, said, "I can't hear you guys, goodbye," and then he went away, and then you've been discombobulated ever since.
Exactly.
Ben is really the emotional core at the heart of this team.
Yeah, but without him, I fall apart mentally. Anyway, no, usually we talk about what's going on in the world of video games around us. But this time we're going to talk about the results from the title of the year poll. If you didn't vote in this, just see it as an excuse to listen to us say funny things that that we said before. So, I have an anonymous hyena in the spreadsheet. David, I'm going to assume that's not you. Did you get the link that I put in the secret chat room?
Yes, I am scrolling up to it though.
Okay. Let's start with the alternate titles of the year. These are ones that, did not, make it. They did not get voted. However, they were said they were nominated. And this is wide open. So the voting on these is just, hey, vote on any of them that you think are funny. And so we have like a ton of them. I think at least 157 of them got votes. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to do the top five. However, please understand that there is an 11 way tie for number five. Also, because we don't necessarily let the very naughty ones get through to titles, you're going to get a lot of naughty ones here. Because
that's basically our modus operandi now.
Pretty much. I think I don't know what we're trying to prove by not making those the titles. So, tied for number five, Cock Malady. Everything is in boxes, hell.
Yeah.
I think you just invented Yu-Gi-Oh. I like that one quite a bit.
Yeah.
J.J. Jameson's Shotgun Wedding. Lovers in a Dangerous Warframe.
I know Michael is like, yeah.
Yeah, woohoo, this is Warframe. neither early nor late, Jala plays games exactly when she wants to.
Hell yes.
News as big as my balls. I think we nominated that. So it was an episode when we talked about the gameplay footage for Cyberpunk 2077. I think we nominated that before we knew that it was actual dialogue from the game. Here's a gross one. Not all that fluoresces has come. So getting a little bit of a blacklight humor there.
That must have been an episode true. I wasn't there.
The audio version of picturing them naked. So a common thing is the blank version of blank. Picture that construction that pops up a lot if you go through all of the old things. Therefore fetishized, therefore comma fetishized. No idea what that was from.
That was like when I was talking about something and then you said that, yeah, somebody likes it, therefore fetishized.
Yes. And then 3 minutes to meh. Do we have anything to say about the fifth place for the Atodi?
3 minutes to meh. That's like a golden rule for me. That's pretty much like the way things go.
Yeah, 3 minutes to meh, 6 to table flipping.
pretty much.
Tie for number 4, A Never-Ending Field of Flopping Ding-Dongs. That one just has a certain music to it, I think. As long as there's a D, no idea. Infinite Satan with a Dash of God. The most whimsical vagina I've ever seen. I think maybe that was one of us talking about Breath of the Wild.
What?
What?
Yeah, what the great fairy appears out of, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I was talking about the great fairy and I was, wasn't I commenting on how very, very special she is? I don't know.
You might have been.
That might have been it, but I do not remember that being said. Okay.
There is a cannibalism option and you don't have to fight naked.
Both of those very good life lessons.
And now it's getting more narrow here. For third place, it wasn't a mistake for the first 35 hours.
That sounds like me playing like
any of the games. Yeah. 10 duck-sized Kirby's, which I'm pretty sure wasn't about Super Smash Brothers Melee, but Super Smash Brothers Ultimate, but could be. Yeah,
that was about what was it? It was like Massive Battle Simulator or whatever.
Oh yeah. We talked about putting Smash Brothers characters in that, didn't we?
Yep.
Yeah. Tied for second place, we have 3 here. Anytime you cross the river, it turns to bullshit.
Which I feel like maybe not in terms of quality, but in terms of topicalness should be the title of the year for 2018 or maybe just 2018's title.
Jeez. this one is pretty good. This should be the title of the year every year. Do not fuck that Nazi.
What was that in reference to?
I cannot recall. See, we're getting into
probably in reference to fifth place, therefore fetishized.
Maybe. I don't know. See, I forget everything we say right after we say it. and then the last one here, tied for second place. I'm sorry, being pleasant is hard. Hell yeah. And then number one.
This first place is very close to my heart.
I think it's because you said it.
Yes, or it was related to something you said. Actually,
yeah. I too want to punch house elves.
Yep.
Yeah. So if we look back, other ATOTY winners. Number one, there's Air D&D, tied with Bad David. Stop that shit. And then let's see here. 2016, it was Parenthood is Pay to Win. And then that is the last year that we did, or the first year that we did ATOTYs. Now let's get to the actual toadies. Do we have any thoughts on the alternate titles of the year?
I only remember a few of those being said.
Yeah, there's a number of these though I really like. Like, yeah, I again have a soft spot in my heart for Waluigi Has Transcended Gender.
That's pretty good. I think that's when we were talking about the Toadette crown.
Yeah. Yeah, well, certain ones of these I'm just like, and this applies to most things, you know, like, wow, these are really applicable titles and very relatable. So
My Son is a Boner Killer. There's a lot to unpack. Yeah. Getting to the titles. So there were other ties just in terms of the weighted total. I didn't want this list to be, this needs to be a little bit more exclusive. Right. So if there was a tie, I gave precedence to the one that got a higher weighted vote. So like if there are two where somebody said, this is my absolute favorite, and another one, nobody said it was their absolute favorite, the absolute favorite won, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Number 10, Something I'll Be Happy to Be Upset About.
Yeah.
Which is very applicable.
I don't remember which game that was I was playing, but it was a game I was playing. And you were like, that sounds like I need to play that game. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say, though, that also, though, sounds like my review of basically everything.
A good problem to have. I love that it is literally just a wordier way to say a good problem to have. So number 9, An Endless Runner Called Life. That is I think somebody's remarked about that as Jala. We were talking about you and your fitness events.
Well, yeah, because all of 2018, I was doing nothing but like, here's another 50K or whatever. So.
Number 8, Prince Flesh Swallow. I think when one of us misspoke about Prince Flea Swallow, the Parappa character. We have two from Jala's run on Corpse Party Blood Drive. The first is here at number 7. Chibi 3D Booby.
Yeah.
The second one's a little bit up here further. Number 6 is tied with that other Corpse Party one. But number 6 is so that is We All Hope to Die Eminently.
Another good life advice.
And that is sharing that spot with Dislocated Circulatory System.
I wonder if this is because people just really liked those episodes, or if those titles just sound exceptionally funny and that's it.
I mean, Dislocated Circulatory System is very evocative, I think.
It is.
I feel like that's... That... I don't know, like... I already really love exsanguination as a word for that.
Yeah.
But I feel like saying like he had a dislocated circulatory system is really gives it a run for its money.
I mean, it sounds like a Mortal Kombat fatality.
Yes.
Number 5 is about our favorite baby boy, Rami. This is he's finally grown into his face.
Yeah, because he used to be the mouth.
Yep.
All he was a giant mouth. I will post him again as the mouth on Twitter. So that way when this episode comes out, people can go refer back to him when he was the mouth versus now when he is very cute and actually has feathers.
Nice. Yeah. Number 4, Consider the Roomba. Number 3, A No Trench Foot Guarantee. I like that one quite a bit. Number 2, Live Every Phase Like It's Blast Phase. Sounds like an Idle Thumbs title. And then
what was Blast Phase? Hades. What's that for?
That was in relation to one of Dennis's multiplayer games.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, it was a Dennis thing.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. And then number one, drumroll please, the streets were paved with children.
Who? What was that about?
I
was on the show, I think, but I don't remember what it was about.
We were talking about just like you have like in a game you couldn't actually like damage the streets, or they seemed to be invincible, something like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Was I complaining because I couldn't do damage to things? That
maybe?
Was a potential thing. That might be a thing.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So my favorite of the ones that were not in the top 10, my violent tendencies and murderous heart. Does anybody else have one that they want to give a bump to? Not posthumously, but
that was about me, my violent tendencies and murderous heart. So
yeah. You have a favorite from the runners up, Jala?
I don't know. I didn't know we were doing that. So I haven't looked through them all again. Let me look.
So I'm just as I read through some of these, A Confederacy of Borns is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
As actually right below, before that is Net Neutrality.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think the violent tendencies and murderous heart are entertaining still, even though it's about me. I mean, like, it's funny.
Yeah. There's a lyricism to it. Yeah.
What was the context for Just Like Pandas?
Talking about something not wanting to fuck, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah. Because that's the most notable thing about pandas. Yeah.
Really?
I don't know. It's a real big problem.
I still maintain. I think we should just let them go extinct. They are a creature that is everything short of trying to go extinct. Like,
yeah.
I've never seen a species actively try to evolve wrong.
Yeah. Sexually attracted to fire. yeah. Well, thank you everybody for indulging us in this. Thank you for voting. This will come around again at the beginning of 2020 as we amass a store of titles and alternate titles for you. Why don't we move along in an orderly fashion to
the multiplayer,
where we ask you a question and then you answer us about it, usually. However, this time, because nothing about this show can be standard, we're doing a free play every five episodes. So on the fives and zeros, we do a free play multiplayer, which is like a Q&A, you write us questions kind of thing. I proctor these, so why don't we jump right in with Roop, who says, what's your opinion on DMC, the reboot? Now that I'm going on DMC 2, I have to say that the humor and seriousness it's on the same level and overall not so different from DMC.
We're going to have two very divided opinions on this.
Because you're anti, right, David?
No, I'm actually fairly pro.
Okay.
My sense, I like a lot of the like the art style, particularly with how Purgatory's depicted. And as much as I'm kind of mixed on the whole, you know, reboot thing and the new Dante, I feel like they overall handle it fairly well. I'm very against, I think the gameplay and in particularly the controls are much, much worse.
Mm.
I think one of the big advantages of the previous games was that the controls were very intuitive and, you know, kind of directly the input for a move directly mapped to what you were doing. Whereas in DMC, they added a lot more like having the double tap controls and, you know, just they made it more complicated as opposed to, in my opinion, making it more sophisticated. Also, I think maybe this is going to get into where maybe I do agree with Jala some. Dante's a little bit of a like psychopath, especially at the very beginning.
What is that noise?
That is me hissing.
Oh, yes. Jolly, I want to hear your opinion on this.
So, bear in mind, I did not play all of the original Devil May Cry, and the little bit that I played of the original was like back in the day, so I'm not talking about comparisons here. I am just talking about the game itself. This is the one where if you go back and you listen to the one time that I played this game and talked about it on the show, I was like, Dennis was very upset with me because I was very mad at this game. And I was like, I played some of it. I don't remember if I streamed it, but I played some of it. And oh boy, I could not stomach dealing with very much of this game just because I cannot stand when anybody talks. Anybody, like the demons are okay, but I don't like anybody else and I hate them all and I can't stand them talking. The game played fine. I do not have any sense, any real sense of the old controls. So I actually remember saying that I actually thought the controls were pretty decent on this one. I even went back and replayed it. Like I played it once and I bounced off of it and I tried to play it again. And I still was just like, I can't take this. I'm getting just like really mad. Like the game loads up and I'm already mad. Like it was ridiculous. I just, you know, I went into this and I just had no tolerance for basically most of the cinematics and things like that. Like it was just rubbed me the wrong way, and just I could not get past that to get into the actual game, because, you know, of course Dennis is like, well, later on he kind of like gets a little bit, like he's still the same character but they tone it down a little bit or whatever, and I'm just like, I can't even get to that part. I don't have any tolerance, because like I tried it again and then I'm like, what is with this music? It's like super emo and like I feel like I'm in some kind of Evanescence video or something. Like, what is this? And, you know, just a lot of stuff just was not working for me overall, which is sad because I think that the lighting and the, you know, overall look of it and the way that it feels, it felt like it would be a really good game. So, like, I can see where people would enjoy it. Mm-hmm. I cannot. Yeah. And I don't even think I could watch somebody else playing it because I would get mad because of those cinematics, you know, like if you like, that would be a good reaction cam, would be like, here's Jala watching somebody else play that game because I would just get so mad.
Yeah.
So
you have to be careful not to facepalm so hard you went actually through your head.
Oh no. See, here's the thing. I wouldn't be facepalming. I would be picking things up and throwing them. Mm. This is like the Vita throwing. This is the Vita throwing, table flipping. That's like the kind of mad I get when I watch those cutscenes. So yeah, like, I wanted to like it. I bought the game. I wanted to like it. I wanted to play it. I wanted to see all this stuff that Dennis was talking about with the gameplay. And I just could not get to it, from the rest of it. So
yeah.
I would be more interested in going back and playing some of the old DMC, like the old Devil May Cry games, not the reboot, just to see what I think of the original stuff, especially now, you know?
Yeah. But, yeah. The exchange that particularly struck me as just being very weird is, you know, right near the beginning where Dante just randomly threatens to kill the woman that's trying to help him for absolutely no reason.
Well, the whole intro is like, you know, 12-year-old boy kind of BS. Like, it was written for some little kid about to hit puberty or right on the cusp of his voice breaking or some shit. And I just could not from the get go. So, I mean, I was already like, you know, checked out of Dante as a character before that.
Yeah.
Let's just put it that way. I mean, like, he's threatening to kill this woman, but also look at the rest of what he's been doing up until that point anyway,
Far into
the game. I mean, like, you know, he's already proven himself to be an asshat.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, yeah. Just the whole thing is just really...
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. If anybody wants to hear my non-opinion, I never played the reboot. I think Devil May Cry is just fine. There's a contrarian part of me that has made a straw man of the people who don't like the new Dante. And the straw man, the particular straw man that I made is based on the complaint that they change his hair color. Therefore he cannot be the same character. Like by taking him from having white hair to black hair, he is all of a sudden a disgrace or something like that. So I mean, like, haha, that's a dumb reason not to like a thing. But I'm sure the actual complaints about his character go deeper to the stuff you all have been talking about. But that is my prevailing impression about
yeah, well, you know, DMC. Cole, that would be a thing if like I ever went up there. And, you know, like there was some time that we could block off. You could play the game and I would be sitting on the couch next to you. And I would just be like, I can't stand
it. No, I would be sitting in a bulletproof room away from you.
Right. Because that would be scary to be next to me on the couch. Yeah.
So I feel like that thing is really where I sort of have a split opinion on the character in that. I feel like in contrast to the people that were, you know, super upset about the reboot, Dante comes across as, I think, is intended to be, you know, much younger in this iteration. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I felt like, you know, came across as, you know, conceivably, you know, what that character, you know, would likely be like at that age.
Okay.
The problem is just what that character would likely be at that age is not at all likable.
Yeah.
We've been on this question for a very long time, so I'm going to move us along. Lindsay asks, if it was your job to fix the PlayStation Classic, what games not included would you pick?
I don't know what's on the PlayStation Classic.
I can put a link in here while I say my answers.
Imagine any game you think of as being a classic PlayStation game, and it's not in there.
I mean, so they've got Final Fantasy VII and Metal Gear Solid and Resident Evil Director's Cut. They've got some high cards, but then they also have Destruction Derby and Siphon Filter, as opposed to the better Siphon Filter 2. Yeah, so... you know, largely considered to be a dud. Stores were not able to move it. I don't know.
Why isn't Symphony of the Night on here? Yeah. There's my answer.
There you go. It's a good answer.
But they have Super Puzzle Fighter. They get some points for that.
They get points for Mr. Driller. Like, who remembers Mr. Driller? So
yeah. See, this was super or pretty significantly before my time. So I don't have a strong thing. Probably like Spyro was probably the game I wanted to play at that time and couldn't because I didn't have a PlayStation. That and whatever the one with the crazy monkeys.
Oh yeah, Ape Escape. Well, they couldn't do that. They couldn't do Ape Escape because they don't have analog sticks on the controller they shipped with the PlayStation.
I feel like
Plus.
An easy way to fix that is to have analog sticks on the controller you ship with.
Yep. My answer, it's two games. I don't know if this would fix it, but who am I kidding? I would just like play my existing copies of these anyway. But it is senseless to me that there is a PlayStation box that does not have Tony Hawk on it. Either Tony Hawk 1 or 2, take your pick, whichever one would cost less to license the music in. And number two, I think of the PlayStation, I think of survival horror. They have Resident Evil Director's Cut. Okay, fine. But they absolutely should have Silent Hill on this.
Mm.
Yeah. And that's my answer. I don't know if it'd fix it. It would make me just as likely to buy it, which is not very, John writes, which video game character has the best hat? Vivi, next question.
May from Guilty Gear.
Okay. I don't know.
Oh, okay. Here, I'll show you what May looks like.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh. Isn't that just like Guilty Gear booby lady?
No. She's a pirate lady. Yeah, she's got a pirate.
Who runs around smashing people with a giant anchor.
Yeah, that's about the size of her body. Yeah. Oh, and it's orange, so of course you'd like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. David, do you have an answer?
I think just all of Bloodborne.
Bloodborne's hat game is on point.
Yeah, pretty much. That one, if I was being specific, I'm a big fan of like the slouch hats, like the old hunters outfit.
Yeah.
Although the like weird tricorns are pretty cool too.
The tricorns are pretty good.
I was apparently thinking of Mai, which is completely different than Mei.
Oh, you're thinking Mai Shiranui. Yeah.
Yes.
That's from Fatal Fury. That's not from Guilty Gear. You got a fighting game, just not the fighting game.
That's fine. Juan says, how is everyone? Hope all is well. What's your favorite video game acronym? Anything from STARS and GEC to actual title acronyms like COD? I'll do mine. There was a survival horror game for the PlayStation that was originally supposed to be called Run Like Hell, but the publisher got cold feet about releasing a game called Run Like Hell, so they just called it RLH. So there's a game called RLH.
Well, it's kind of like, who's that flying? You know, WTF, who's that flying?
Oh, what's that?
The game is Who's That Flying?
Oh, is that separate?
WTF.
Is that separate from Work Time Fun, the PlayStation game?
No.
Oh.
This is like an indie game.
Oh, yeah.
That was on, that's somewhere on Steam.
Okay. Yeah, there's a PSP game called Work Time Fun. That's like a WarioWare kind of thing.
Nice.
Yeah.
That wasn't my answer. Like, I guess I'd say BOW from, primarily Resident Evil 6 is my exposure to that.
Oh, yeah.
But
it was a thing all the way back to the first game, BOWS.
Yeah, but I mean, like, they said it a lot.
How about you, David?
So, I think something that really disappoints me is the lack of recursive acronyms in games.
BYOBB? The second B stands.
Well, that would be like, for example, GNU, or as in GNU Linux.
Mm-hmm.
Unofficially stands for GNU's not Unix. So where the first word in the acronym is in fact the acronym.
Oh yeah. Which is like a less dumb version of NT technology. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. but I'd have to say probably Stalker would probably be my favorite.
What does Stalker stand for?
Theoretically, so from what I understand, it's mainly a shout out to an old Russian movie, but it theoretically stands for Scavengers, Trespassers, Adventurers, Loners, Killers, Explorers, and Robbers.
Okay. Yeah, that seems like it describes that game.
Yeah, pretty much. But, I don't know. I'm sure there's great ones I'm not thinking of. BOWs though was a good call. That's was maybe my favorite concept from the Resident Evil games I played.
Yeah. Greg writes, how do you feel about the current trend to bring in celebrities or professional voice actors to voice games? The quality of voice acting is much better, but it also raises costs, and I have played many indie games with normal people doing voice acting just fine. This is a hobby horse we get on WAF, and it's not even, I think, an original point. For me, the line between pro and amateur voice acting is much less significant than the line between no voice acting and any voice acting. Any voice acting forces you into a bunch of constraints that are not necessarily good for the writing or content of a game. So that's kind of where I sat on it.
I would say, though, one exception, I think, to that is when your fantasy game has, like, ye old fantasy voice.
Yeah, how is that an exception?
Because I think that's one instance where no voice acting is usually better.
Yeah. Oh,
he's pro no voice acting.
Yes, I am.
Oh,
yeah,
I'm pro no. The other way around.
Yeah. No. As far as like pros or celebrities, if it's a stunt, oh, that sucks. But like, I don't know. I think about like Mass Effect and then bringing Keith David in, like, that's fucking great. You know,
well, hey, like a good example, Final Fantasy X, when you talk about Waka's voice being mm-hmm. exceptional because he's actually like a trained voice actor versus these other people who are not and whatever, yeah. like in the English version of that.
Yeah.
It's funny because like I went back and I was listening to like just some clips of the Final Fantasy English voices and Final Fantasy X English voices, and I was just like, wow, this is terrible. Okay. Like it's really like it's ugh, wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty bad. And then I was just it's because I don't believe the version I played allowed me to change the voices over to Japanese, but I ended up because I recall that I ended up buying some DVDs that were just like bootlegs of just clips of the cutscenes in oh, yeah? Japanese because I wanted to hear the Japanese voices so much.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny because the only voice that I liked better in English was Waka's voice.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody else, like I preferred all of them in the Japanese. And so like my memories of everybody but Waka for English were basically replaced by the Japanese voices
yeah.
because of listening to them.
For anyone so. who isn't aware, Final Fantasy X, the character of Waka and the character of Kimari, they're voiced by John DiMaggio, who is known for being Bender and also for being Jake the Dog in Adventure Time. Like a pro bona fide like voice actor as voice actor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
and you know, like the thing about Waka is like, you know, his character, you guys talked about it in the Final Fantasy X episode, but like his character is like his actual personality is not the greatest, but the voice acting is so good that it makes you like the character, which is why I was upset when they never made a Waka figure because I liked the character on basis of the voice that mm-hmm. much.
Yeah.
You know? But anyway, continue.
and also like his design is really good. Like, you know, yeah, he's an Aqua Jock.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. Overall, like I'd say, yeah, probably tend towards more maybe the voice actors thing. I mean, there's some that are you know, a little bit border line on which they count of. For example, I cannot ever remember actors' names. The guy who voices Zavala in Destiny is also the like the commander in both Fringe and The Wire.
Okay, yeah, I know who you mean. I don't know the character's name or the actor's name, but yeah.
Yeah, but like just his voice and basically anything is just mm-hmm. awesome. And I feel like I don't know if this counts as celebrity voice, but getting Gygax to do all the voices for the D&D MMO.
Yeah, it's a stunt.
It's a stunt, but it's a pretty amazing stunt.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I really kind of enjoy virtually all of the voices in Warframe are just like people like developers and people in the office and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's only one actual professional voice actor, and it's actually one I forget who, but it's a fairly obscure character.
But, that's funny.
Yeah.
Moving on from that, Ollie writes, how would you respond to the following statement? Innovation for innovation's sake is worthless. Game companies should stick to making regular video games that use controllers and TVs and leave motion controls and VR alone.
Where is this statement from?
I don't know. I want to do a Google. I disagree with it on its face. Like, yeah, motion control and VR stuff is pretty goofy, but it has been used to good effect. Like, I don't know. I'm a VR believer, even just based on my Fisher Price VR experience with PSVR.
Although on the other hand, what about like the, for example, in the Wii era was definitely motion controls for motion control sake. And I feel like that was a bad thing.
Oh yeah. That's dumb. those were growing pains. But, you know, for all of the areas where it was kind of shoehorned in, you get something like Wii Sports. I mean, yeah, that's kind of cheating because that's like a tech demo that justifies the system. But I don't know, like that was a thing. That was a phenomenon for a reason. You know, Kinect was pretty embarrassing, original PlayStation Move. But I think that all became interesting stuff, Yeah, no, I think that the second you settle into any kind of like rigid orthodoxy, you stop exploring at the edges of what a game can be, you know?
Yeah.
I thought the two screens on the DS was really dumb until I played a Castlevania game on it.
Yeah.
You know?
I feel like, though, in terms of motion control, at least, I feel like it would, with the exception of Wii Sports and Johann Sebastian Joust, it was basically dumb until VR was a thing.
Yeah, you just need one to justify the other.
Yeah. So I feel like that's still a pretty large chunk of time and functionality that basically was almost completely just dumb.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, Sega has been trying to do motion control shit for, you know, they tried to do it way back in the day. I had one of those, like, the activator. I had one of those things, and I played, like, all of two games with it, and it didn't work very well. But, like, you know, I was interested in seeing where that would go, and, you know, like, they were way before their time, and they shouldn't, you know, at that time, there wasn't enough support for that kind of a thing, but... Yeah. You know, like, I think we're in the day and age now where it's kind of like a given that that's where it's going to be going next, because the fidelity of what you see is not going to get that much better. You know, like, the graphics aren't going to be jumping up to be that much better at this point, you know, and that kind of a thing. So they need to go into a whole new realm, you know.
I mean, bring back the what was it, like the gyroid or whatever for the Nintendo?
Are you thinking of... Oh, you're probably mixing up two things. Like Rob the Robot had a game with him that was Gyromite. Or are you thinking of the U-Force? Yes. Or are you thinking of the Power Glove?
No, I'm thinking of the Gyromite.
Yes, yeah, where you would spin the tops and stuff. Yeah.
Yep.
The thing that makes the most sense is to have two different lanes. You know, two different tracks. You know, the hyper experimental, high cost, you know, low player base stuff where all of these ideas are worked out. And then several years later, you end up with the best of that stuff being folded in, you know, to the mainstream thing. The second you start saying what exists right now is the only thing a game can ever be, I think things get a lot less exciting.
Yep.
Yeah. Let's see. Corbin asks, what game would you speed run if you could? Or if you had to? Sorry. that changes the tenor of it. What game would you speed run if you had to?
Mario, because I'm not going to speed run a game I like. Fuck that noise. Like, that would just frustrate the shit out of me. I would be very upset. Jella plays games in her own time. We had that happen during the title. That's a thing.
Yeah. I would want to speed run a game that was broken as shit. Like, I know it's been done forever, but it's not. What original game would you want to speed run? Like, to learn the exact ways that Ocarina of Time is broken would be fun. I think
I'd maybe go with the original House of the Dead.
Oh yeah.
That's a game that's super speed runnable and is a game where it evolved, or like light gun games evolved enough that, you know, sort of like how if you go back and play the original Zelda, in a lot of ways it's very, very easy because, you know, gamers as a whole have gone better. There's kind of a similar thing with that with House of the Dead. So it's a game I maybe could speedrun.
So my conception of light gun games is that they proceed at a pretty prescribed clip.
So one of the features or gimmicks, depending on your perspective on House of the Dead, is that depending on your actions, particularly with like rescuing people, changes how you proceed through the levels.
Yeah, you're picking routes.
Right, exactly. So you can, just choosing routes. So it's a combination of choosing routes for speedrunning and being a game I like that I could maybe actually speedrun, because I'm not that good at most games.
Right. Yeah. So we've been going for about 20 minutes on this segment. I'm going to do one more here. This is Monstro, who writes, what was the first time, if ever, that you cried because of the story in a video game? Let's see here. First would be Final Fantasy VII because I am a basic person.
You want to know a fun story? I'll tell mine in a minute. Continue to tell us about what made you cry.
I mean, Eris's death. Because I had never experienced in a video game a something that was so crafted to be a thermonuclear melodrama bomb like that. You know, and I played it when I was like 10 years old, you know, so like there was probably a certain vulnerability associated with that. The hardest would be the last episode of the first season of Walking Dead. Probably for similar reasons. Because I don't know, that was a melodrama bomb that was, I think, aimed at a person who was at that stage of maturity that I was at when that came out, maybe. Jolly, you had a story that you wanted to bring in, so I will throw to you now.
So the earliest I can think of that I cried at a video game, this will be kind of funny. The original Legend of Zelda, after I died. And I got back to the intro and I'm staring at the screen and then it like the music starts up and then it scrolls and tells you about your mission that you're supposed to do. And I just fucking died. And I'm like, no, I will never save Zelda.
It was a cry of defeat.
And that game was damn hard. Like I didn't give up, but like, I don't, you know, it took years before I finally did get Zelda.
Yeah.
Supposed to.
It was not a cry of defeat. Zelda it was a 2. Cry of frustration.
Yeah.
As opposed to Zelda 2, where when you die, it's effing terrifying.
It is pretty terrifying. Get that big silhouette of Ganon.
The next thing I cried at after that would have been Lunar 2.
Okay.
Lunar 2 at the end of the game when I thought it was over, the game tricked me. And then there was an epilogue that I didn't know about after the ending, which was dissatisfying. And then I found out that there was an epilogue the next time I loaded it up a week later and said, oh fuck. And then there's like another 15 to 20 hours worth of gameplay.
How is that an epilogue? That's like a Red Dead Redemption 2 epilogue.
Very long chunk of a game after that to go finish up and actually see the real ending to the game. So that would be my second. I don't know if I've cried about a video game since then.
Yeah.
Really. Mostly if you can't tell, it's like if I'm unable to get to the point in the game where I'm like, you know, for whatever reason, if I'm not able to do the good thing that I'm supposed to be doing and it's, you know, whatever, that's when I'm upset about it.
Yeah.
Like I was upset that Eris died, but I was like, oh, well, snap. Hell.
I worked so hard to get her limit break. Come on.
Well, and then too, like I loved her as a character. She was like, you know, my fave. So I was like, no. Yeah. And I was like expecting her to come back to life or something.
Oh, I mean, everybody was. Cottage Industry Online was making up rumors about that.
Yeah. Well, I didn't like do the internets about that.
Yeah.
But anyway,
David, how about you? What floods your attic?
Ah, man, this one from that I know I'm going to have like the great answer to as soon as we sign off.
Yeah.
Especially because I'm trying to think. I know there's actually one recently. I guess this wouldn't be my first one, but one recently that was, you know, really good. For me, they tend to be more like, you know, more whatever the video game equivalent of like Sturm is, where it's just characters I really, really like that die. Oh,
you were a Sturm fan?
Like in Dragonlance?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I like how that is a common touch point for us all. Continue.
Yes. I mean, yeah, of those characters, he was like, what, one of two people in the party that had any redeeming traits, so.
Yeah.
Tasselhoff. Okay, continue.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I said two.
Okay.
Riverwind never really got a chance.
Yeah.
Continue.
So, I'm trying to think. I remember actually Magi Nation has some fairly depressing parts just because like there's a number of characters that it just you know, summarily, kills off in a game that, other than that, is just a completely ridiculous, like, adventure. I don't know. Sorry, I will post when I come up with what my actual answer should be.
That's fine.
I think it's funny though, because like I played a lot of, like, since the time that I played the games that actually made me cry, like I played a bunch of stuff that have been very depressing or, you know, terrible, lots of bad things happen, and I haven't been like, I haven't cried about any of that crap. Yeah. It's just, oh well.
It just has to hit you at the right at the right moment.
It's all about my personal accomplishments, and if I don't get where I need to be, then I'm upset about it.
Cool. Well, thank you, everybody. So, go ahead.
Can I advocate for doing one more, mainly because it's actually something I want to know people's answers to?
Sure. I've closed the window. Can you read it?
Sure. So Dan Sawyer says, "What's your favorite action RPG that is well-paced so that you can dip in for an hour or two at a time and feel that you've made decent progress in that time?" He says that, parenthetically, "Three kids and a busy job means no long gamer sessions."
Hmm.
I don't even know what counts as an action RPG anymore, so yeah. I don't know what to say, really. I mean, like, I can tell you some games that I like which are action games, but that doesn't... I don't know what's an action.
Permanent progression and not turn-based, probably.
Like Dishonored.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Then Dishonored.
Yeah. If you're specifically referring to something Zelda-like, It'll Do is fun. It's more of a puzzle-based kind of thing, but it is kind of a top set. It's top-down, plays like Zelda. Mm. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Ages of Mistralia, that was a fun game. I need to finish that game.
Yeah.
That's an action RPG, too.
Cool.
It's actually more RPG.
I don't know about... I don't know if it constitutes, like, in terms of, you know, playtime thing, but Stalker is definitely an action RPG, and I can't recommend it enough.
Oh, yeah. On PC, it kind of breaks it a little bit because you can, you know, just quick save and then be out when you need to tend to your children. Sure. Yeah.
Or Switch, you can suspend it and come back.
Yes.
Yeah.
How is Pillars of Eternity? Even though I realize that's not action.
I never played it. I don't know.
I played a little bit and I was just not on board. It was just a slog when I didn't get super, super far, but the bit that I played, I was like, oh. I've played some CRPGs and liked them, so it's not like it's...
I was going to say, you were a big Planescape fan, right?
Yeah, I totally love Torment, so, and Tides of Numenera, so I don't know. I bounced off of that one.
Well, thank you everybody for writing in. We will squirrel the other questions away for a cleanup at a later date. If you want to participate in these, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. Thank you, Jolly, for putting this up.
You.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. David, you were not here last time, so I'm going to throw to you.
Yeah, so I've been doing a little bit. I've been still grinding some on GTA Online. It's been sort of interesting. They did their Christmas event, which most notably they converted the entirety of San Andreas, which is, you know, pseudo LA, mm-hmm. to being a just completely snow covered.
Okay.
I'd be interested to know if they did this last year, or I'm assuming maybe this was just them saying, like, hey, we developed this for Red Dead Redemption and we can, you know, use it.
Okay.
But it is kind of interesting the degree to which it works actually pretty well.
Does it change, like, the driving physics, or?
As far as I could tell, it does not change the driving physics, although it does, for example, you know, even if you're driving on what would otherwise be, say, a concrete road, it will, you'll kick up snow with your tires. So it's not just like, you know, a palette swap of, you know, dust to snow type of thing. But, you know, overall, though, it's just kind of funny the degree to which, other than a couple of points where, you know, all of the trees are like the Joshua tree styles, you know, most of it, you can't really tell that that's not what it was, you know, meant to look like.
Right.
So other than that, it overall continues to unfortunately be, it's a game that's great as long as you don't have to deal with the player base.
Which is, that last word in the title is a bit of a sticking point, isn't it?
Well, I mean, the problem is that, you know, in most MMOs, there's a strong separation between, you know, the social aspects. Either A, can be strictly cooperative, or B, you know, are more the community aspects as opposed to having to be the moment-to-moment gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not like that, and also is a game where there's just absolutely no nod to balance. So, you know, missions, I've had missions where, you know, I was, you know, running some cargo and was, you know, about to my destination when the Batmobile pulled up behind me, tossed four sticky grenades on the side of my car and blew it up. And other than the fact that this was like me in a crappy like delivery van versus literally the Batmobile, There's the fact that, like, that set me back, like, maybe 4 hours.
Okay, that sucks. Yeah.
You know, so...
It's still funny, but it sucks. I'm sorry you lost 4 hours.
Yeah. So it is funny. I'm a little disappointed that there's not an achievement, at least for specifically the Batmobile.
Just called na-na-na-na-na-na.
Yep, exactly. I also would have had much more respect if that had been an option for the custom horn.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But on the other hand, I got invited into, for some reason, someone thought it would be a good idea to do a pickup team with the final heist in the Doomsday content expansion.
Hmm.
Which is, I think, like the kind of the most, you know, probably the biggest or whatever, you know, current PvE content. And it's just completely nonsense. Like, the basic plot is that a evil robot created by their equivalent of like Elon Musk has decided to destroy humanity. And so you have to, like, make your way into a nuclear bunker to, you know, fight it off and, you know, destroy its hard drives and stuff like that. And then chase Elon Musk out of the silo using jetpacks and chase him down and kill him. So, like, it's just completely bonkers. The entire thing is just complete nonsense.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's kind of too bad because that's a point where it's, like, clearly this was an amazing experience that is, you know, what this game's wanting to get at. It's just the fact that this was, like, a, you know, maybe half hour to hour experience out of a game that otherwise is in many ways just overtly hostile.
Yeah.
So,
did you mess around with the, Rocket League knockoff, the laser arena or whatever it was? that they launched over the holidays?
Not too much, because again, with the game being very, very hostile, in order, you can play it, but basically the way it's set up is their arena system. You know, each game you get points that based on your performance, and that allows you to have a career mode and basically you know, progress through sponsorship tiers and stuff. The problem is there's you can only actually accrue those points and access that career mode if you pony up 1 million in game dollars, which is if you're buying in the cash shop, would be equivalent to $20.
Oh, yuck.
Or would be somewhere in the neighborhood, if you were just straight grinding, could be, you know, 4 to 8 hours of grinding. Probably more than that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's some of what I mean when I say, like, it's got some super, super hot hostility.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, was kind of a mixed bag. On the other hand, a game that's been pretty much just awesome is Deep Rock Galactic.
Yeah, I'm curious about this. Deep Rock Galactic.
Yeah, so it's basically a mashup of Minecraft and Left 4 Dead.
Okay.
So the plot line is that you're a dwarven miner that space miner. That is, you know, sent to this planet to, you know, mine various minerals. However, the planet is also inhabited by hostile bug creatures.
Okay.
And so you go down with a team of four people. There's basically a scout that has a sticky flare and a... a grappling hook, a engineer that has a sentry gun, and a platform gun, the gunner who has a big gun, and then also zip lines, and then there's the driller who can dig super, super fast and has a flamethrower.
Okay.
And where it gets into the Minecraft things, as I've sort of already implied, is pretty much all of the level is completely destructible. So you can, you know, actually just before we got on, I was playing and I happened to be playing as the miner and got lost and separated from my party.
Okay.
And I could basically see where they were in relationship to me, but couldn't figure out how to get to them. So I proceeded to, like, drill directly through the wall and nice. Ultimately get to them. You know, similarly, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of things where, you know, say rare resources will be say maybe halfway up you know, a several story tall wall, and so you might have to have, say, the engineer shoot a platform below it, and then a scout zipline up to the platform.
Yeah, yeah, really kind of like leans on necessary cooperation because everybody fulfills a particular role.
Exactly.
Well, like everybody protects the miner.
yes, exactly.
What's the metric for success? Because like in Left 4 Dead, you're trying to get to the extraction point or to the safe room. Like, what are you trying to do? Just like amass as many resources as possible?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things. The overall cycle is basically you have this what they call the mule that kind of looks like that robotic pack mule that the military is developing that is sort of your, you know, follows you around, and that's where you deposit all the things you're mining. Mm-hmm. And their basic game mode is basically you have to mine a certain amount of resources. And then once that's done, you can basically, you know, hit a button on the mule and it'll walk back to your drop pod and which will then launch a couple minutes later.
Mm-hmm.
But then also you have, you know, side objectives and rare resources you collect and things like that.
Yeah.
There's other game modes that range from basically point defenses where you're repairing mine equipment, or there's I guess sort of like capture the flag type things where you're basically getting alien eggs, which makes the aliens irate at you.
Okay.
So it varies, but, you know, tends to be those sorts of, you know, kind of modes where often the actual task you're doing is not 100% related to the mining you're also doing, if that makes sense.
Okay.
The other kind of interesting mechanic in it is that since you're in mines, it's completely dark. So you have a fairly weak headlamp, but other than that, you have to throw flares, which only last a short period of time, and they regenerate, but you only have up to 4 in your inventory at a time. And there's a lot of mechanics with that. In particular, the scout, you know, is the only class whose flares can basically stick to things.
Yeah.
So one of the more dangerous enemies is a cave leech, which is basically a cross between the barnacle from Half-Life 2 and the smoker from Left 4 Dead.
Oh.
And so, yeah, like, checking the rooftops of whatever big cave clearing you go into can be very important.
Man, nobody, I guess, aside from these guys, and anybody else who has that I'm not aware of, nobody has taken the barnacle, and that is one of the best things about Half-Life.
Yeah, and this is straight up, like, I would say almost has to be 100%, almost like reference to it. Like, it is literally the exact same, like, toothy, hangy, sagging, hangy down thing. Like, it
looks fine.
Almost exactly.
That's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. No, which I think is great.
Uh-huh.
Like, yeah. And one of the things I like about it as compared to, like, the smoker is it's something where it basically targets you and then, you know, has to actually sort of like whip its tongue thing over to get you. So you can see like the tongue thing coming at you and have time to, you know, either run or shoot at it or whatever. So it feels like, you know, the smoker in Left 4 Dead was very much, designed to basically,
I mean, it was a buddy system check.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And that's true here too. However, I feel like by making it not just be this, in effect, a hit scan weapon,
mm-hmm,
they kind of game-ize that, where there's actual gameplay.
Yeah, where it's not just a trap. Check. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, there are some weaknesses. It's in early access. There are some weaknesses in terms of their progression system isn't super well balanced right now,
mm-hmm,
in that a lot of the progression, a lot of the perks are just mostly worthless.
No.
But, you know, that's something they're working on. It does have a really interesting tone in that the Deep Rock Galactic is the corporation you're working for, and it's just slightly like dystopian megacorp.
Yeah.
Doesn't really, really lean into that in a way that would be, you know, excessively dark, but does, you know, kind of have some funny stuff. So yeah, just really enjoyable game.
Nice. I hadn't heard of it until you mentioned it in the level secret channel, and it looks pretty neat.
Yeah.
I was like, are you like amassing people to play with? Are you playing with pubbies? Are you playing with people you know?
Yeah, I've just been doing pubbies, although it's a great co-op game. So if anyone's interested in doing some co-op, I'd definitely be up for that.
Nice. Is that everything?
Uh, I mean, I've been doing a very little bit of Fortnite, but not much worth, worth talking about.
Okay. Cool. So you had Deep Rock Galactic, and I had it written down because my memory is a sieve.
GTA Online.
GTA Online, yes.
Yep.
Yeah. Jala, how about you?
Well, since I've been either fighting a cootie or doing my resolution rook and all of that kind of thing, all I've done is a few more hours on Octopath Traveler, but because it is a JRPG, a few hours does not mean that I got very far.
Doesn't move the needle. Yeah.
Like, I finished up the chapter twos, and I am in the middle of starting a chapter three quest currently. I did some side quests, and there's not much to say because that's not much. Like, there hasn't been enough time for anything new to happen. So that's the report.
Yeah. I don't know that I have any new questions based on what you have spoken about before. Do you see yourself seeing it through to the end?
Yeah, like, it's just that I've been busy, and like, I'm about to get busier, so it might be like a slow playthrough, but not because I got bored.
Yeah.
Like, I'm 43 hours in or something at this point. Maybe more, 44 hours, something like that.
Yeah.
And I'm not bored of it. I got other stuff going on. So it might be one of those instances of I set it down because I get busy kind of thing.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
We will see. We will see what happens.
But it's on the Switch.
The Switch. And, like, you know, a lot of those quests and stuff are, you know, they have simple enough trajectories and they're wrapped up fast enough that I can pick it up, put it down and still be fine and be able to get through it. It's just, I'm going to, you know, that'll be like the only thing I have time to play, you know, for a while or something. So hopefully I will not be like telling you every single week. And then I played a few more hours of Octopath Traveler and nothing new to report. Like, I hope it's not going to be one of those dragged out endeavors. I will try to the best of my ability to be playing some other stuff, shorter stuff that I can get through in a briefer amount of time as I am able around things.
I mean, but Ben got away with that shit with Rocket League for years. So
yeah, that's true. But I mean, eventually people get sick of, like, oh my God, she's still talking about that same stupid game. You know, like me with Persona 4 Golden forever. Like, that was 100 hours. That was 95 hours. Like, oh, my God.
You did 40 of those, like, while you were in bed for a long time.
That's true. But that was, like, when I was knocking it out and surprised everybody. Hey, guys, guess what? I finished it. Like, yeah.
So a question. Octopath Traveler, bad title or the worst title?
It's not the best title.
It's a pretty bad title. Sure.
It's like, it falls out of my head real easy, and it didn't ever incite me to be interested in the game. I heard all these people talking about, oh, Octopath Traveler is such a good game. Oh my God, I'm so hype about this game. And I'm just like, it doesn't sound all that exciting to me. Like, you tell me Octopath Traveler and I think of, like, Octodad, you know, I don't think about, you know, anything exciting. It doesn't trigger, you know, adventuresome times.
I was gonna say, it sounds like a Kingdom Hearts subtitle.
Yeah, right. That needs a few more words that don't make sense in a line.
Yes, in a fraction.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But the thing about it, though, is the last one that I just wrapped up in the chapter two was Ulbrich, which is the fighter knight guy, right? His chapter two, and then I'm starting chapter three of his quest now, because it conveniently is also, like, you know, because basically when you are turned loose to go do all of these different quests, the overworld map shows you where you need to go for each person's quest, right? And it tells you what recommended level they say you should be at before you do that quest, so you don't jump in and then you're like grossly underleveled for it or something. And so when I finished all of chapter twos, I'm like, okay, now I've got all chapter threes. What is the lowest level chapter threes that need to be done? I will do those first, you know? And there were two that were tied. It was like Alfin and Ulbrich. And I'm like, well, I just finished Ulbrich. I'll just continue on with Ulbrich. So, starting up his chapter three. And basically, he is essentially trying to, like, because his story kind of, like, starts out with him talking about, like, oh, well, you know, I was part of a kingdom. I was one of the knights who was the guard for the king. And then my best friend, knight brother guy, ended up betraying. And this is all, like, in the intro. Like, this isn't news or anything. He ended up betraying, you know, the king and then killing him. And I, you know, and he just, like, his country fell, and then he just became a dude who with a sword that ended up just settling in some random village and just, like, protects it from bandits or whatever. And then, like, I don't know, at some point he just decides that he needs to go out and find the guy that betrayed the king and then figure out, you know, why the hell he did this in the first place and all this other mess. And then also to find out basically, why does he still use a sword? Why is he still a fighter? What is he fighting for? You know? And so, like, in his second chapter, he goes to an arena town. Like, he's trying to find a particular guy who's fighting in the arena. And in order to get that guy to talk to him, he has to prove his worth by fighting in the arena or whatever. But then he encounters all these different people with their own reasons for fighting. And that kind of teaches him a lesson where he's like, well, this person's fighting for this and this person's fighting for this. What am I fighting for? You know, and he's like trying to work it out through battle, you know, trying to figure that out. And then, like, in the chapter three, it's actually getting interesting because now he ends up going to a place where the guy who betrayed the king, who was like his basically brother in arms, has set up a new life for himself and is defending this town and is basically a local hero. And so, you know, then Ulbricht's getting these confused feelings like, is this the right time for me to go talk to this guy? Because, you know, like, it is, I came here with the potential of possibly spilling this guy's blood, depending upon what we end up, you know, how that confrontation goes. Mm-hmm. But he is also saving these people from this invading force and all this other stuff, and he's like a local legend and everybody looks up to him, so I don't know how I feel about that, you know.
Yeah.
And so, like, he's kind of a lot of
I kind of feel like I've seen this anime a couple times.
Well, the thing that I like about it is, although all of this sounds like super familiar story beats, like every single one of these stories has a super familiar story beat to it, okay, the thing about it is that the charm comes from the characters' personalities and the depth and the reflection of these personalities, where they seem more like legitimate people instead of just the functional archetype that they are. Like, you know, Ulbricht, although he is, you know, this knight guy, I mentioned it the last time I was on the show, you know, he was talking to the thief guy, Therion, and, you know, Therion was like, how would you infiltrate this place? And then Ulbricht gave him some response and, you know, Therion's like, oh, I thought you would be a frontal assault guy. And the knight guy's like, nah, not unless I have to, but I actually want to see what you're going to do. And, like, even though he's an honorable knight, he is not giving Therion shit for being a thief. He wants to see what Therion's doing. And actually, in Ulbricht's current place, they've had some more exchanges, and Therion is, like, you know, basically asking Ulbricht, like, what's he so worried about and things like that, and, you know, like, why does he want to find this guy? And then he actually expresses concern for Ulbricht. Like, you can tell that they are friends, even though you don't see them interact very often, just in those little bits of party banter in between all of these different events. So, you know, like, their conversation is really limited, but there's a lot of depth to it. And you can read into it and see, you know, a lot more, you know, like, a lot more suggested by things that are said and then also what's not said, you know? And I like that a lot. So, I mean, although it's super typical stories that I'm just like, when I first picked up the game and I was playing the demo, I'm like, all right, this is pretty stock standard, guys. Why is everybody loving this game so much? Okay, I like the battle system, but is that really the reason why? And then, like, now that I'm playing more of it and seeing more of the characters, I'm like, no, actually, the characters, you know, they are archetypes, but they have more to them, and they have, you know, dimension and depth that I enjoy, and then their interactions I really enjoy a lot as well. So, because like I got an art book and guidebook from Japan, and everybody in the level chat, like I was mentioning it, and all the people in the level chat were like, oh my gosh, because there's a tabletop RPG session written up in there. And so, you know, like there are a few people who are now going to be looking for that book. It is in Japanese. So like, you have to be able to read Japanese to get it. I, like the tabletop session is like 30 pages. And I'm like, okay, my Japanese is so rusty. That will take me a very long time to try to translate. But like, you know, if anybody else translates it, let me know.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a Square game. It seems like somebody would have been on that.
Yeah, somebody somewhere probably has translated that. It's on the internet, I am sure. If you know where it is, tell me. Thank you, at Jellichon.
Yep. It is fine to lazy web. Use your platform. Yeah. Anything else to say about Octopath Traveler?
No, not for right now. Cool. When I do more, I will tell more.
Yeah. I've got three. And in looking at my list that I have written out here, I realized all of these are HD remasters or remakes of some stripe. And if you average out the years that the originals came out, I'm apparently stuck in 2005 in terms of the games that I am like all kinds of into. So take
to be
that.
Fair, that's a relatively good year to be, you know, stuck in.
I suppose. Yeah. So I'm going to do these. The first one is the biggest one, and it's going to lead to more talk later because this game is not necessarily out. But this past weekend, I played and streamed the demo of the Resident Evil 2 remake.
Yeah. I'm glad you did.
This is so fucking good. I was beaming the entire time, just a smile from ear to ear. So Resident Evil 2, this is the one that takes place kind of inside Raccoon City, notably in the police station that is kind of under lockdown, but is also a little bit the epicenter in that it is directly over the center of the incident. And you know, it's like right on top of the Umbrella Lab, leads into the Umbrella Lab, et cetera, et cetera. This is a remake of that. I kind of stayed a bit on media blackout, with the exception of some of those trailers that came out. So they said, yeah, people seem to want this, so we'll make it. And I'm like, cool, I will see nothing. And then I saw them do something at E3. I was like, okay, that looks pretty promising. I will see nothing. I went into this and wow, they have done a lot. It is not just fan service, although I am human. I'm not made of stone. Like going into the RCPD and seeing these familiar areas, but also seeing them gussy it up in a way that makes a lot of sense. Like you are in the entry hall and it's not just a big sterile clean area. Like they have brought in hospital beds and equipment and stuff, and we're using it as a triage center before the place was overwhelmed, right? Like the east wing of the first floor is flooded. Just all kinds of things like that. Just all these little like just place setting decisions that make the station feel a lot more like it is in the middle of this horrible incident that will be impossible to escape from. Fantastic from a tonal point of view. From a play point of view, I think that it is very wise for them to move this to third person. It is strange how an engine that was designed to, designed for a game that was first person, how that works for a third person over the shoulder shooter kind of deal. However, it is great, when you are fighting against zombies and lots of them to have that sense of place, to have that sense of your character's relation to the enemies in the room. Right. You just kind of have to do that when you are not fighting, you know, at most like a handful of molded in RE7 or are fighting one particular boss who is going to be chasing you in a roughly predictable pattern. Right. Mm-hmm. Just different, you know, different gameplay considerations. They made the right choice. So in terms of just the dynamic damage that you do to the zombies, you know, how you can actually take off their limbs and they behave differently. You can shoot off like a part of their head and they're still going to come after you. Nice. Just all of these little considerations up to and including like weird niceties, like you can not just use an herb if you pick it up, but you can actually like do a mixing or combine. So you don't have to like clear a space to pick it up and mix it. That sounds super pissant, but like, you know, you pass up a lot of herbs because limited inventory is a thing and they kept that. Like, this is not necessarily like, even though it is an over the shoulder shooter, they have kept you with a limited inventory. So like, you have to manage that in a way that you really haven't in a Resident Evil game that was from that perspective. You had to do it in 7, and that was like a big throwback. I was worried they were going to kind of ease that consideration, but nope, this is a survival horror ass game that they are making in a modern age, and I fucking love it.
Nice.
They've changed up enough of it. Like, you know, so there are familiar places and familiar climbs, but like, it is not just a complete, you know, carbon copy that is placed in the same map or, you know, layout or footprint of the RCPD. Like, they've added a new floor. They've blocked some stuff off, like where people have made barriers. They've added in a system where you can pick up planks of wood and actually use that to bar up windows. And so that is a limited resource that you have to figure out how you're going to deploy. Like, there's so many great little touches that show just a tremendous amount of care and kind of eliminate any worry that I had that they were going to completely actionify it. And shows that they learned from the stuff that was amazing about RE7, right? And I just cannot wait to get to some of the later stuff or get into the scenarios that have Mr. X where they can play with the Pursuit's gameplay that they worked into it. I am so fucking excited about this game.
Leon sounds like such a little kid, and he even looks like Brad Renfro from that commercial that Brad Renfro did for Japan as Leon many, many moons ago, back when Brad Renfro was alive. He's dead now, isn't he?
I like young Leon. Like, he's a rookie. And in the original RE2, he seems weirdly competent and on top of things, and like he is in his late 20s. As opposed to being somebody who feasibly could be fresh out of the academy at like age 20 or 22, you know?
Oh yeah. Well, like, I didn't say it was a bad thing. I'm just like, I've seen old Leon for a while. I mean, old, quote unquote, old Leon, who's like my age, right? You know, but like, you know, so was, you know what I'm talking about?
For the first one of like Leon as super cop.
Yeah, that was where he, you know, obviously he cannot be on the Raccoon City Police Department because there was no more Raccoon City. But that was where he was like part of, like, he was trying to rescue the president's daughter. Like, he was a federal, like you said, a federal super cop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's just homies with the prez and what's up.
But like, you know, like in the demo, I got to see Marvin, and it was great to see his new role in that. It was great to see, you know, like just other police that you get to witness their horrible deaths.
Oh yeah, for sure. I love it when you were just like, he's only going to come back with half of a,
Yeah, and it's fine. It's fine for a piece of media like this to be predictable because it just kind of plays in. It's
it plays into it. And then they can also play off of that really well, depending, you know, so it seems like they went in a really good direction with it.
Yeah, it was already going to be a day one purchase, but like, I need to block off that entire weekend, like get all my assignment play out of the way so I can just chug a lug.
Yeah, I might have to check this out because one of the questions we didn't get to this time was like, what series do you wish you had gone in on back in the day? Mm-hmm. And I think probably Resident Evil is definitely one of them that is that for me.
Yeah, it's not a bad answer. Of course I would say that.
Well, so here's a small question that's just for you guys, really. So what's the difference between the standard and deluxe edition of the digital copy of this? Because there's a $10 difference, and it doesn't say like there's a pass or anything. And I don't see any details at all on the Steam page about like what the difference is between those.
I have no idea. Capcom is known to be on some bullshit with that. So I don't trust them to intrinsically make that worth it.
Yeah, I don't know. That's what I was just wondering. I'm like, you're going to charge me $10 to make it deluxe, but what do I get? anything.
Yeah.
So.
No idea. Maybe they're waiting until after release. I'm going to get it on PS4 because I don't want to risk not being able to run it. Yeah. I need this in my system as soon as possible. Yeah. So any questions about the Resident Evil 2 demo?
Nope, I was there.
Yeah. David?
No. It sounds really cool, though.
Yeah. If you can't tell, this is kind of the most excited I've been about a game in a very long time.
Mm-hmm. Well, David, you can play it 30 minutes of it on Steam. You can download the one shot.
Oh, the demo's on Steam?
Okay.
Yes, it's on Steam.
Nice. Yeah. That distribution model is really cool, too. That is the first time that I've seen a public demo limited in that way.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm just like, I'm upset that they don't have it on the Switch. I want it on the Switch. They have Doom on the Switch. Why don't they have this game? They have other Resident Evil. They have Resident Evil Revelations or something on the Switch. So yeah. Why not this one?
I don't know.
Damn it. I'm upset.
I have no idea.
Put it on the Switch. I want it on the Switch. I will play it everywhere. I will be happy.
Yeah.
Damn.
The other thing that I've been playing, speaking of things that are on the Switch, is New Super Mario Bros. U Deluxe.
Oh, how's that?
It is really good.
Cool.
So with any mainline Mario game, it's a bit of a thing, right? Like you kind of have to jump in right after it releases because there's all that press and enthusiasm kind of working you up to it. Like it's kind of front of mind. You can't wait because the game just kind of becomes less relevant and it never drops down in price. And so I had a Wii U. I played and loved Super Mario 3D World, but I never got New Super Mario Bros. U, primarily because, like, the New Super Mario Bros. Stuff, I was never really that into. Like, New Super Mario Bros. On the DS didn't have enough new ideas. New Super Mario Bros. On the Wii, like, it kind of seemed made for multiplayer, and I was not necessarily, like, doing an awful lot of multiplayer at that time, really.
Mm-hmm.
So all the new ideas for that didn't really, like, play in. So it was a bit fraught. I slept on New Super Mario Brothers U on the Wii U, just because, you know, I missed that window. And also at what point would this even be worth paying attention to? Right. It's ridiculous, but no, it's actually like fantastic. Like it is where they actually had really good and varied ideas for single player Mario, mixed in with the potential to do it multiplayer. And now that it's on the Switch, I can play it exactly how I want to play a Mario game, which is like do a stage or two before bed, you know. Just the like all of the joys of multiplayer of portable gaming, right? Yeah. So this is you know, rendered in 3D, but it is entirely 2D. You can play as different characters, but at least for Mario and Luigi and one of the Toads, it doesn't necessarily change the mechanics very much. It's not like a Mario 2 kind of deal. But they work in just all kinds of new kind of area hazards and enemies and things like that. And something that I love is that they bring the Mario World style the world map matters idea to it, which is especially entertaining. Like you have stages that have multiple exits and new routes through the world map. You have like navigation around the world map that has a timing challenge that is kind of worked in. Like you will find a place where like a penguin enemy is chasing around a power up. And when you are running in the place where they're doing their little chase, you know, you can either get the power up or, encounter an enemy, which takes you to a Hammer Brothers style, like enemy challenge area, stuff like that. Like the ice world has an amazing stage. Like it's the midpoint where you're working your way up a tower and there are icicles that fall. The large ones make platforms and change the level geometry. The small ones just end up being kind of damage hazards for you. But you can see where they're about to fall by drips of water from the ceiling. So as you're going, you can like time your ascent based on where they pop up. Like they do a lot of really good stuff just with the flexibility that having, you know, 3D rendered stages will allow you to do. It just feels incredibly fluid in a good way. One of the gimmicks of New Super Mario Brothers is that the motions of the enemies are a bit timed to the music. So like when they reach like a little grace note or something, there'd be like a ba ba, and the Koopa Troopas will do like a little dance move to that. And then that's where they change their pattern. So like listening to the music is a really big deal. There's just lots of like nice, cool stuff that makes this a fun 2D Mario game that, admittedly, I was horny for 2D Mario because I am playing Super Mario Brothers 2 right now for WoF. And I was like, oh, that's out, and I'm going to go play that. And it has been absolutely the thing that will scratch that itch for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
Cool. Sounds good.
I like it. Yeah. Any questions about New Super Mario Brothers U?
No.
David?
No.
All right. Finally, and I don't know how much I have to say about this, because it's a game I've talked about quite a bit, but, man, this is quite a week for me being horny for WoF games, because finishing Final Fantasy X made me think, I like Final Fantasy games quite a bit. I never fired up the Final Fantasy XII remaster that came out that I was all excited for. And so I fired that up and I'm going through the opening hours of that. And man, is that just a wonderful video game that, has only risen in stature, since the time that I played it in terms of my estimation of it. Like the gambit system is fantastic and that it just completely lets you open up all of the tools for AI, that they've been using for their enemies for a long time and lets you automate these battles in an incredibly satisfying and iterative way. The writing for the game, just kind of sparkles in a way that I didn't expect. And also, I mean, honestly, it is like night and day compared to Final Fantasy X. Like, it is dialogue that you really want to pay attention to, even though the plot is basically just Star Wars. It is good Star Wars with interesting characters who have cool stuff to say. Yeah, and it's a fucking beautiful game. Just the design is fantastic. You know, it's an Evolice, so it is pulling from that visual vocabulary, but even updated to HD, you can just see the colors pop and you see all these, you know, visual flourishes, that are on pretty much everything from the characters, the monsters, to the environments. Like even the sewer level is fucking gorgeous. Yeah. And one of the big complaints that I had about, Final Fantasy XII, which was that the license board made it so most characters would kind of develop into being roughly the same. That is fixed by the Zodiac job system, which calling it a job system is a little bit of a misnomer, because the job system in Tactics and the job system in 5 was more about developing along one path so you could carry the skills onto the other. This is more about restricting your license board, you know, that you spend your, license points, like your action points on to get new skills and open up new equipment and stuff. It's about constricting that to a particular role in the party, and you pick a main class, and then about a fourth of the way through the game, you can pick a subclass. Calling it a job system is a misnomer, and you shouldn't get excited about that if you're like, oh, it'll be just like Final Fantasy V. Not the case. However, by actually letting you specialize your party by restricting your options from the get, it makes the cast of characters much more exciting, and it makes it just more fun to break this battle system over your knee, which is the measure of what makes a Final Fantasy battle system good. Yeah. I love it. I don't know how far I'm going to get into it. This is more of like a nostalgia trip. I don't think I'm going to invest the 80 hours that it takes to do end game content. Who knows when I'll stall out, but man, Final Fantasy XII is incredibly good.
Yay!
I have been excited about stuff this week. I'm very positive about video games.
Yeah, you are. That's good.
Cool. Any questions about FF12 Remastered?
Nope.
Okay. How do you all feel about bundling it up?
I feel buttons.
Zippers.
Buttons.
The credit. Oh, thank you everybody for listening to this episode of The Level. We really appreciate it. For people who are listening who also have a membership on our Patreon, the first Jackbox night that we're going to do is Thursday, January the 24th at 9 p.m. Eastern. We're going to do it until about midnight, so we have 3 hours for patrons to hop in and participate and goof around and have a good time. That'll be lots of fun. But for this show in particular, you know the stuff to do: ratings, reviews, talking about it with your friends, and just plain old coming back next week and engaging in the Slack, all of that good stuff. Am I forgetting anything?
No.
All right. So I've been Cole Ross. You can find me at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I continue to be David Meismith. You can find me on Duckfeed.
I have many aliases, but one of those happens to be Jolichon in places on the internet. You can find me there.
Yeah. And stick around for some titles. Who has titles?
I got a few.
Okay.
Bits and Bobs on Potential Future Men.
Okay.
Ben is the emotional core.
I like that. What else?
Disappointing lack of recursive acronyms.
All right.
Pro-no, meaning like for pro-no voice acting.
Okay, just pro-no. Okay.
Yeah, pro-no. I mean, you can put pro-no voice acting if you really like it. Yeah,
that might be a contender. Do you mind if I stylize that with a hyphen between pro and no?
As you like.
Okay.
Aqua jock. As one word, of course.
Okay.
And then I said two.
What was that about?
That was David saying that there were two characters, like two characters in Dragonlance that were worthwhile.
David, do you have any?
So I just had two, one of which was very recent. I had from way back in the beginning, sexually attracted to fire.
That's a Simpsons joke.
Oh, is it? Okay. Yeah,
sorry.
And then I had internet. I'm on there.
And then proving that each episode, there is always one. I did not write any down. I am real pro-no.
Yeah, pro-no is pretty fun.
Yeah.
Although I was the one who said it, but you know, that's all right. What? I can every once in a while suggest something that actually becomes a title.
Yeah. And any opposition? Is there anybody who is anti pro no?
Oh boy, that's just too many.
So
too
is many no pro going. Pro no?
So yeah, so I mean, they're yes pro no, because people are pro no. There's nobody who's no pro no.
Oh my god, I'm gonna die. I'm gonna start.
We can go with pro now.
Okay, prono, it is so moved.
Prono is go.
All right, take good care.
Good night, everybody.
good night. Have a good
night,
week.
Y'all.
Feel better, Jala.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Peace.